Cavalcade of Kings. Richard II. At Edward's death in 1377, Richard II, a boy of 11 and the son of the Black Prince, succeeded to the crown. His uncle John of Gaunt also had designs upon the throne, but he was not popular with the people, and he soon submitted to his nephew's claim. The wars with France had almost drained the English exchequer dry, and to raise money, the poll tax was levied on the people. This was a tax on every person in the kingdom over the age of 14, and consisted of the payment of 3 groats, or 3 fourpenny pieces a year per person. The people of Essex rose against the poll tax, and being severely handled by the government officers, killed some of them. At the same time, one of the tax collectors called at the house of Wat Tyler at Dartford in Kent, and the outcome of his visit was the ill-fated peasants' revolt.
Daughter, go ye and open the door before the man, whoever he is, breaks it down.
I'll go at once, Mother.
I've never heard the like. There's no peace these days for decent law-abiding people, even in their own homes.
It took me long enough to open the door, wench.
What does the man want, daughter?
I am the law. How much longer are you going to keep me standing on your doorstep?
Come in, sir. Come in.
Just as well for you, woman. Now, what's your name?
I'm the wife of Wat Tyler, sir.
Well, I've come to collect the poll tax, and I want particulars of your family. Is your husband living?
Yes, sir.
Where's the rest of your family?
I'm the only one, sir. My daughter here.
Look to it that you speak the truth, woman, or it will be the worse for you.
By the saints, a woman should know the size of her own family.
When it comes to paying your taxes, some of you have got very bad memories. Well, now, you say there's 3 occupants of this cottage. That means I'm to collect the poll tax for the 3 of you.
No, sir. Only for 2. My husband and myself.
Now, what about this buxom wench here?
My daughter is not yet 14.
You're not 14? You lie, woman. I wager she's old enough to be your wife or mistress of any man. Aye, and I'm not so sure that I'm not the man. Come here, wench.
Mother!
Do as I bid. Get thee gone, old woman, and leave us alone.
Oh, take your filthy hand off me! Mother! Mother! Leave her alone, you dog, or by the saints, I'll brain you with this stool.
Get thee gone, you old hag, and put that stool down. Put it down, I say, or I'll throttle you.
Help! Help! Don't you help my mother! You beast! You loathsome beast! Oh, God, help us! Father! Father!
What's this? Archbird, you loathsome beast! Rot your soul out, dog!
I am the law!
Then I take the law into my own hands and choke the life out of its cursed throat. Now die, thou swinish despoiler of women. Die! Die!
Tyler, my son, what is this?
I've killed him, Jack Straw. Killed him, do you hear?
But why, my son?
Look at my daughter. Look at my wife. That's why. Men of Wessex, this is the breaking point. If there's a drop of English blood left in your bodies, it must cry out for retribution. Our backs are broken under the load of cursed taxation which is imposed on us, and for which we get nothing in return. And like the slaves we are, we merely talk our misfortunes over amongst ourselves and make no attempt to right our wrongs. But when our women folk fall the victims of the lusts of the men who collect these same taxes, then 'tis time we rise and demand justice. Yea, demand it at the very steps of the throne of England.
Aye!
I agree with thee, my son. And the men of Essex, who are my followers and who are already in arms, will support thee and the people of Wessex in the cause of justice.
Then let us set out now, at once, united in the cause of freedom, and let no man rest until we set foot in London Town. Out, yonder is London Bridge.
And look, Tyler. William Walworth, the mayor of London, has caused the drawbridge in the middle to be raised against us.
Think ye, Jack Straw, that that will stop the men of Wessex and Essex. Fire there, varlets! Lower the drawbridge!
My life will be forfeit if I do!
My life will be forfeit if you don't! Come on, men! Throw him into the river!
I'll be back! I'll own it!
You see, friends, how easy it is to force obedience from the dogs. As soon as it is down, we'll cross and break open the prisons, and then we'll burn the court rolls and make an end of the lawyers who have charge of them.
There's one other who has long oppressed the people. John the Gaunt.
Throw his palace to the ground!
Hey, why should he lull in luxury with a rich food to eat and rare wines to drink whilst we wallow in poverty in our hovels? At last the bridge is down. On, men! On to Mile End!
Next morning, the young King Richard, now 16, with a small company of men-at-arms, amongst whom was Walworth, the mayor of London, rode into Smithfield and saw Tyler and his people approaching.
Tell me, good Walworth, which is what Tyler?
Tyler is he who leads the rabble, sire.
He approaches us. There's no denying the man's courage.
We are but 60 against 60,000, sire.
Verily, it is true that curs hunt in packs. Methinks I had better treat with the ruffian.
Would be as well, sire. See, it comes this way.
King, dost thou see all my men here?
Yea, fellow. What seek they?
Peace and justice.
What are their conditions?
There are four. Firstly, that neither they nor their children shall be made slaves to the landowners again. Secondly, that the rent of lands shall be fixed at a certain price in money instead of being paid in service. Thirdly, that the iniquitous poll tax and other abominable taxes shall be repealed. And fourthly, that they shall be pardoned for past offenses committed in their fight for freedom.
Tyler, if 'twill bring happiness to my people to grant them what they ask, then gladly will I do so. I will order my clerks to write out a charter accordingly. Devil scum!
My words are offensive, young king. Remember, you speak of loyal men who are at my command, and who have sworn to do my bidding.
What rot ye, Tyler? Dost threaten the king?
I'll
spit thy cursed throat to me out of here!
Oh, son of a dog!
Men of England! The treacherous devil has slain our leader!
Thou wilt, thou fool! They'll shoot us down with their arrows!
Avenge our leader! Avenge Tyler! Come on, men!
Men of England! Tyler was a traitor! Ye are well rid of him! But I, your king, will be your leader, and I swear before heaven to right your wrongs. Will ye have Richard, the son of the Black Prince, as your leader?
Aye! Long live King Richard!
Long live King Richard!
But Richard betrayed his people, and the peasant revolt came to naught. Then followed years of extravagance and misrule until the nation groaned under its yoke of misery. Richard's first wife, Anne of Bohemia, died of a broken heart. And later, he outraged all decency by marrying Isabella of France, a child of 8 years. His final act of injustice was directed against his cousin Henry, Duke of Hereford, the son of John of Gaunt, whose estates Richard confiscated at his father's death. Richard then left for Ireland to quell a rising. Henry landed in England with an army to claim his rights. Sometime later, he deposed his unworthy cousin Richard. We now come to the final scene in the drama which is laid in Westminster Abbey. Parliament has assembled, and Henry sits beside the empty-covered throne of England. Richard has just signed the paper renouncing his authority and absolving his people from all allegiance to him. Then, personally handing over his royal ring to Henry, he said,
"Fair cousin, I now hand thee my royal ring."
"My lord, I accept thy ring and all it stands for. And may God be pleased to guide my hand and help me rule the people wisely and well."
"It pleases me mightily, fair cousin, to hear thy voice utter such a pious plea. And if I could have had leave to appoint a successor, thou, Henry of Lancaster, above all other men, would have been he.